All right, Dan, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Mason. How about yourself?
Doing wonderful. Working on taking down a lot of portfolios in the Southwest and big deals out East, and business is great, but the guest that we had the pleasure of interviewing today has the type of real estate that I think you and I want to buy that he is representing those clients. So I think it's a really fun show that we'll get to share with you guys.
Yeah,
Yeah,
agreed. No,
agreed. No,
I love nice Southern California real estate.
absolutely. So we have the pleasure of interviewing Vinny Enriquez today, and he is the team lead of the Enriquez Group and the host of the Road to Growth podcast, which both Dan and myself have been the pleasure of being guests on. His real estate team is based out of San Diego, California, and his team has successfully sold over $300 million of San Diego real estate. On his podcast, he interviews entrepreneurs that have overcome adversity and allows them to tell their story on how they have done it. And today we have the pleasure of interviewing him and hearing how he has done it himself. So let's bring Vinny in.
Welcome to the Big Picture Blueprint. I'm your host, Dan Habercost, along with Mason McDonald. And we're going to discuss all things land, real estate, and business in general with all kinds of exceptional people. Let's get started. Vinny, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me here.
Yeah, we're excited to talk. Of course, I was on your show a few years ago. Mason was on recently, and we've met a couple times in California. But we wanted to dive right into team building, management, training, everything around hiring and maintaining good people. Because I'll tell you right now, that's a struggle I have in my business right now. So you've got six people on your team. How do you think about from the time you initially interview and hire someone to the time that they've been with you for a few years of keeping, incentivizing, and continually developing your people?
When I first was looking at building a team, I had a negative mindset towards what I call the McDonald model, right? Where you basically put someone in, plug and play. If they leave, you put someone else on there, right? And plug and play, right? Because I was just like, you know what? You're not treating the person like a person, right? And so I've kind of like leaned on that a little more, but also trying to still treat them as much as a person as possible. So I made like, we put together systems. We first had a operations manual that we built out, but we never read the operations manual. I just had the team kind of keep adding to it. So now we have an Excel checklist that's really easy, like really basic for every activity or for the most activities that we do. So it's basically, okay, well, this is who does it, when he did it, so on and so forth. So it's just set it and forget it, at least on the admin part of it. For the agents, we built something similar to that, but it's also, again, because I don't want to treat them too much like that quote unquote McDonald's model, I try to figure out what their best attributes are and try to lean into that as much as possible. So if someone's adamant that they're not going to call and they don't want to basically get that callous, right, then go, okay, well, how many coffee appointments can you get on a weekly basis? You know, or, okay, I really want to be a social butterfly. Okay, well, what's your goal for those parties you're coming to? How many leads are you going to try to get out of that? So trying to find something that's attainable for each person on, I guess, a daily and weekly basis.
Okay. Yeah, I like that. So really clear lead measures, it sounds like, is where it starts. Kind of to that end, when you train these people and they do succeed and they get into a good rhythm, have you had issue where they just go off on their own?
Yeah, I mean, that's a constant thing that I think most business owners think about, right? It's like, how can you make sure your bubble is big enough to support their bubble? Right. And so constantly, okay, well, how can we refine our systems strong enough that basically those systems are going to be hard for them to actually implement themselves over time? Because I think if you look at strictly at splits, then you're always going to be fighting the battle of, okay, well, I got to reduce my splits for them. Okay, they got better. I got to reduce my splits for them. And now you're just a number compared to something you can build that's basically going to be harder for them to build as an individual.
That makes sense.
That's really fascinating. And it's a challenge that we all face whenever we're in a leadership or a management position is you want to hire the best caliber people. You don't want to necessarily hire yourself, but there is this idea of, I want to train my replacement. I want someone that can do it as good or better than me. So whenever you're actually looking at hiring people, how are you structuring your interviews? How are you seeking out these realtors that have that it factor that could go out and start a brokerage and be super successful, but you know they need to be on a team and are wanting to be a part of a team and the shared vision that you're creating?
So I was taught to do these 6 days of interviews. And I'm a high D, right? So I'm direct to the point, and that pains me. So I was trying to outsource the 6 interviews. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is just too much. I'm not doing this. And so I end up building 10 questions, just 10 simple questions, asking different things that will kind of give me insight into who they are. 3 of the questions on there are riddles, right? It's not even about getting no one's got the answers correctly on the riddles. No one ever does, right? But it's not about the actual getting the answer correctly. It's about basically seeing how they're coming up with the answer, right? And then seeing how people, like, I've had people where they just freak out because they can't get the answer. And you're like, this is a person I probably don't want with me, right? Also, too, if they get pissed off about having a riddle, they're probably not going to be a person I want to work with, right? So it's finding that we have kind of a synergy. There's kind of a family effect, because usually when you have a system that's giving that stuff that's going to make them grow to the next level, but also they feel like there's a synergy, like a family, usually going to stay a little bit longer with you.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I was about to ask you to give us one of those riddles, but I don't want to get embarrassed on air of you seeing us get frustrated and not being able to answer the question. But with those 10 questions, do you have any particular employee that gave you an answer that you were like, this dude or this dudette was the person? Like, you just knew it in that moment that just gave such a fantastic answer to one of these questions?
I think they all give it in their own way. I've had it more so where I've talked to them and I realize it's going to be hard for me to make my bubble big enough to support their bubble, that they're going to be there only for a couple of years. And I got to be okay with that, right? To make sure that it's a mutual benefit relationship for those couple of years. And then you have other ones, you're like, I could see them being here for 10 years, 15 years, right? I mean, so I think it hasn't been like, well, that's like the perfect answers, but it's also been like, I can feel like this is a person that I want to work side by side with. So I don't think there is a perfect answer.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that's the beauty of being able to have that system and not exactly have it a plug and play model is what you're saying, but being able to build a team that's working towards the same vision. And something I say a lot, having the different talents, temperaments, and convictions to be able to go out and execute this vision together, where you don't want the same answer all the time. That's something that Dan and I work really well together, but we're almost the exact same person. So it's like obnoxious of trying to brainstorm of like, yep, I had that idea too. So being able to have all these different people of different backgrounds is great. But something kind of along the lines of what we're talking about related to the tactics of hiring people as well as managing them. You were mentioning some kind of creative within the realm of realtor lead measures of coffee appointments and going to parties and that sort of thing. Can you talk to the audience a little bit more about how do you expect your realtors to go out and gain these leads? Because coffee's kind of fun, parties are fun, but it's a little different than necessarily like cold calling to get it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, so for me, I love cold calling. It's every call is basically a new experience, right? Like, one can be an F you, the other one could be come to my house, list me, right? Like, so I was always a fan of it. As a solo agent, that was like my business. That was like what I would go after. As a team, you realize that not everyone's wired the same as you, right? And I think that real estate is not hard, but it's not easy. I don't know if that makes sense, but the idea of real estate, right? Who's going to transact, right? People usually transact when there's a life event that happened, right? A death, a divorce, birth, right? Some kind of life event, right? So it's training your team to be aware of those life events and then gain that person's trust, right? And then from there, it's finding out what they're looking to accomplish with basically that life event, right? So it's not like it's rocket science, right? It's just a matter of, finding those people, being aware of being a detective, and then taking them to the next step.
Yeah, that all makes sense. And I have to joke. You enjoy cold calling? That's rare, Vinny. Where do I find a younger version of you, Don?
But you know, it was so like when I first started in the business, it was one of those things that like, I got a callus off it. Like, it was crazy. I would actually like, not to this degree, but I was addicted to it. Like, when I wasn't calling, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm missing out on those deals right now. Like, I'd be thinking about it. Like, I had dreams about cold calling. Like, it was, but you do something consistently over time, right? And you're just like, oh my gosh, I just enjoyed this, right? Now with more laws and that kind of stuff that go into place these days, there is that thing in the back of my head, just like, oh, gosh, okay, did we really weed through this data to make sure that everything's compliant? Did we do this and that? And who's going to be a pain in the butt? And so there are things now, but yeah, when I first got the business, it was, yeah, an enjoyable time.
Oh, I like that. I'm going to take that clip, and I think that's going to be in my internal training for, because no, you're right. That mindset, there are deals sitting there, and if you don't make the call, someone else is going to get it. So I'm glad you said that. That's a good way to think about it. So, all right, you've got your people, hired, trained, something I've struggled with as well, kind of continuing along that thought process is keeping them and making sure, like you said, that the overarching bubble is big enough to support theirs. So how do you do that? Do you set goals for them that you follow up on and revisit every 6 months, every year? What does that look like?
Yeah, so that's been kind of like the balancing act of it. Because when I first started with the team, it was not the greatest experience. I was building it out. I brought on basically team members. I actually had a team member that threatened me that she was going to send her friend to kill me or stab me or whatever. I don't know the correct terminology. And just random things like that. And I was like, okay. And then I had other ones where I spent so much time with them and I focused on them more so than focused on the business that I was doing, still in production. And when they left, it was that more painful, right? Because I was like, oh my gosh, the time that I spent on them, I could have been spending producing, right? So I've made it pretty straightforward that we have a daily meeting every day. We have a Tuesday meeting that we kind of do a brainstorming session on. And then for newer agents that need it, we'll do an hour one-on-one a week. If they don't have anything to go over, we'll skip it. For older agents that maybe don't need that one-on-one, I make sure they send me their daily email. So they're sending me email of what they accomplished that day, so that I can look it over. So really trying to make it where I can give value to them, but also at least allows me to focus on other stuff.
Well, Vinny, I have a question to kind of back up about your career of, tell me a little bit about when you decided to be the leader of the team, because you mentioned your love of cold calling and lead gen, and it's something that I've seen a lot in my career where someone is an absolute stud in the field and just fantastic as an individual contributor, and they get into the leadership position and they want to jump back in and dive into the business because they miss it so much. So could you tell us about your career and what made you decide to be a leader?
So I was in construction for 7 years before I got to real estate. And so I did a year in Afghanistan. Then I came back to the U.S. and I was like, I'm going to jump into real estate. I had a negative idea towards realtors. I was like, oh my gosh, you mean cheesy? They do the pictures in front of everything. And it took me a long time to kind of get past that thing. I'm still working on it. But anyways, so I was like, I'm never going to put a photo out there of me. I'm not going to do that. People just know me by Vinny. And then I looked at it, I was like, I got to bring an admin. So yeah, a couple of years went by, I think two or three, and I was going to bring an admin on. And she was raised in like the Buffini model, where it's basically be in front of people. And she was really a big push for me to do the photos, all that kind of stuff, do everything there. So I worked through that, and I'm still kind of a solo agent with one admin. And then it was very hard for me to leave, take trips, right? And enjoy basically what I was accomplishing. So I was like, all right, well, I have to build this out to allow me the flexibility to take those trips. So I'm not stressing out, because I was in Thailand for a trip and I was making calls, doing everything at like 2 a.m. And it was just like, it took away from that experience. And so I was like, okay, well, I got to get the admin. Then I have to have agents that basically, if I'm not there, they can kind of pick up the slack that I can kind of pass on things to. Over time, I started allowing other agents that weren't part of my team to do stuff, but then they weren't doing to the level that I really wanted them to do. And so I was like, okay, well, if I'm going to do that, now I have to actually train them, be on my team so I can keep them accountable. And then it kind of became a slippery slope to kind of like expand and kind of grow from there.
So it was kind of growth by necessity of, yeah, you put yourself into a job that it was all the time, all hours of the day, all hours of the night, and truly of, if it's just you and your solo operator, entrepreneur, leader, it's exhausting. And I think that Dan, I know you probably resonate with some of those points of it's like, crap, these people aren't doing it as well as me. I have to, you know, I have to train them. And that's so painful. So how did you get over that pain of having to do it and realizing you have to relinquish some control? Do you hear about the deals that Dan and I are doing and feel like you lack the capital or knowledge to do them yourself? Allow us to be your partners in this and visit gupland.com to learn more about how we can provide you with all the capital to complete land transactions, as well as the expertise and guidance for you to create your own business. Visit us at gupland.com.
It's, I've gone to a decent amount of events where I talk to people, and even for my podcast where I talk to business owners, right? Where you kind of hear where they're kind of coming from. And I think the common theme is that you're not as important as you think you are, right? And there's stuff that people are going to be better than you at, right? Even though you might think you're the best at it, right? But there's people that are better than you. So it's like you step away, you give. I'm a board member for one of the YMCAs in San Diego. And one of their things they say is freedom in the framework, which I think basically is the same thing for teams, where you basically have a structure that you're looking to accomplish, but you allow the freedom to basically add to it and make changes to it.
Now, yeah, that makes sense. Well, continuing on, I think we spent a good enough time on hiring and maintaining employees. So let's move to lead gen, because whether you're a realtor, you're in land like us, flipping houses, it's all the same of starting with direct to seller. And so what do your avenues for lead generation look like? I know you're on social media quite a bit. You're doing cold calling still, direct to seller. Is it all the coffee meetings? You know, we hit on this a little bit, but tell us about that today in 2024.
So the funny thing, I know we're talking about the present, right? And when I first got in with cold calling, one thing that I realized that I was doing a lot of distressed individuals, right? Divorces, deaths and things like that were coming about. And the one thing I started to realize, especially with the short sales, was a majority of those people never used me again. And my kind of idea was that even though I gave them a good experience, they were in a bad situation, right? And so that repeat business from those people really never bear fruit, right? And I've seen other people over time where, you geofarm or you're farming a demographic. I forgot how they call it, demographic farming, but it's, I guess, a new term, whatever. But so they would focus on those people, and then over time, it would grow bigger and bigger, right? So over the last couple of years, I've kind of expanded into more like networking with other individuals, like attorneys that I have connections with. The podcast, I've made it more a conscious effort, even though it started out as me kind of bringing value to other agents I knew. And also, I guess, bringing value to myself. It's been more of an avenue of connecting with people that I would probably never connect with to get business out of that. For the team, I think as a new agent, open houses can be one of the best ways of doing it, right? The people are already saying they have interest. It's about you winning them over. And then, yeah, I still incorporate the cold calling just because it allows me the flexibility in my schedule, right? It's kind of the easiest one. I could just kind of, okay, I have some free time. Let's get to the cold call. So I think those are like the biggest pillars. But yeah, the networking, and of course, past business are the ones that kind of grow over time. And those are they can be the consistent pillars over time. Like there's a agent that I know, and I find it one of the simplest of things I tell people, anyone I can talk to about it, is they told me their business model. And they go, our business model is 5 attorneys giving us 5 pieces of business a year. And I was like, that's the simplest of thing. It's gorgeous right there. So that's been one of the focuses probably for the last like year or so of building up those attorney base.
That's great. And there's a lot to unpack there. And there's so many different client profiles that you kind of walk through. And I think all of us experience that of it's really nice to be able to get a lead source from one or two different places. And you don't have to go down all these different routes. And just out of curiosity, since Dan and I have a podcast, obviously, and we've had the pleasure of being on both of us as guests on your podcast. From the podcast, what are the client profiles that you get from there? Since you have so many investor types, do you work a lot with investors or people looking to, build or develop or do land in San Diego? And
so you two are actively producing, right? You guys are, flipping land, basically teaching it. You're doing the activities, right? the one thing in San Diego, there's more students of flipping than there are actual flippers, right? I mean, because there's so many classes, right? So I come across people all the time that are looking to, flip or buy and hold, things like that. But the margins for buy and hold, unless you're getting like 20%, under fair market value, or you're getting, an apartment complex that's, again, below market value, you're really not going to see that in San Diego. And the fix and flip, especially if they're a first-time, flipper, again, their margins have to be a lot better than more established flippers, right? So I get those people all the time, but it's weeding through them, right, to figure out what their value add to that flip's going to be, right? So I get those people. I mean, the majority of the people that I'll get off that are just individuals that are looking to purchase. They don't have a set person. They're looking to move to San Diego. Those are the ones that in this market that we currently sit in are the ones that it's more feasible to kind of work with them.
That makes a lot of sense, and totally get what you're saying of most people that are in this flipping or wholesaling or entrepreneurial real estate investing niche space are wasting their time. They hear you on a podcast. They want to reach out and they're like, man, I've got 59 different ideas. Vinny, you're going to be able to help me buy a house at 30% of market value that needs paint and new countertops. And I'm going to make $1 million on my first flip. But I think there is that other side of it that so many people that are investors or investment savvy or just have financial literacy, if they hear you and they say, okay, Vinny is an expert on the San Diego market and he's got all these high level investor people that he's interviewing on the podcast, then you can potentially get a lot of really great clients that are great to work with of, we're looking to move to San Diego. I know Dan wants to get a place in San Diego that I'd like to use, but let's maybe move into kind of what the market in San Diego is like. It's so different than where we are, where there's ample land for ample growth out here in Colorado Springs. You can just keep moving east forever until you get to Kansas. What are you seeing in terms of market conditions? What is the development activity like? Are there a lot of zoning changes that are occurring to allow for ADUs and increasing density in certain places? What's your kind of general picture of the market out there?
Yeah, so For the most part of the time right now, we're talking about ADUs and JDUs, right, are pretty much approved across the board, right, in San Diego, right?
Again, sorry, did you say JDU?
Oh, a junior additional dwelling unit.
Okay.
So an additional dwelling unit and then a junior one. So yeah, those are passed pretty much anywhere now. And now there's also, most places, they'll allow you the 4 units. But even though it's not zoned for 4 units, you could probably get passed with 3 units based on the lot size. So they're allowing the freedom there. There was in California, and it still hasn't technically been approved by San Diego, where they're going to try to make the additional dwelling units as cloud condos attached to the house. But even though it's approved by California, it hasn't been approved by San Diego. So we'll see if that comes to fruition, what goes on there. There is an interesting one that's going to, because we talked about the flipping game, in July, there's a law that's passing or going to go into effect where if you own a property for 2 or less years, that you have to base any upgrades you did in the property, $500 or more, you have to notify what that was and who did the work. So they're trying to make it, I think, a little bit harder for investors to push the pricing up here. But yeah, developments, new builds, and you have some kind of like in East County, and then mostly like in the Temecula, Menifee, in the Riverside area. But besides that, we have the ocean to the west of us and Mexico to the south of us. So it's hard for other developments to really kind of be built up.
Yeah, I just drove. I was out there a couple of weeks ago briefly and drove through. And I mean, there was development all the way out in Victorville. And I'm trying to think of the next town way out in the Mojave Desert. It's even growing out there, so it's certainly moved east. And the density thing and allowing ADUs is somewhat ironic because, of course, as we know, traffic isn't great as is. So having additional density is only going to make that worse.
But and they're waiving, I think, from what I was talking to someone the other day, and they're talking about that they're waiving parking restrictions too, like with the ADUs. So it's like it's going to be a shitstorm. But oh, sorry, yeah, I don't know if it was lost.
You know, we're actually, Mason and I and a group of friends are going to Japan, and I was reading the other day that Tokyo Metro has more people than Los Angeles and New York combined. And what do? Most people just don't have a car. And I think over time, if it continues to grow, it may transition that way. And if public transit gets better, and we'll see. You never know. But so many people want to be there. I'm sure there'll be a solution to it one way.
Well, so do you know in, I think it's the Philippines? I was talking to one of my buddies that lives out there. So they made a thing because they had some high density and so many people had cars that your last number, I think it was, on your license plate, you were allowed to drive Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I think it is. And then everyone was allowed to drive on Sunday. And then you had the even number or the odd number, you're allowed to drive Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday or something like that, right? So, but then what people started to do is they bought two cars with two different license plates. And like, yeah, so it's always interesting how people try to fix the destiny issues.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. So, well, on that topic, what are you seeing today? I mean, it's March the 7th, 2024. Are prices stable, going up again, coming down on average in the residential market where you operate? What are you seeing today?
Yeah, they're going up again. I mean, we just have such a low inventory. I mean, a stat that I use pretty frequently is that when COVID happened and we were like, oh my gosh, everyone's taking their property off the market, we have no inventory, we were roughly about 4,500 properties in San Diego County. Right. We're like, oh my gosh, we got nothing. Right now we have 2,600 properties. Right. So you're saying, you're going, oh my gosh, like we need inventory. And like, that's why, I mean, even when rates went up, we saw a small dip, but because they went down to the sixes, people have just jumped back in the market going, okay, well, be ready because rates are going to go down to the fives and blah, blah. So yeah, it's going up again.
So talk to me a little bit about it, because I saw in the news that everyone in the entire state of California is leaving and it's going to sink into the ocean and all the doom and gloom. So with low inventory, walk me through like the transaction volume. Is a lot of stuff coming on the market and then getting scooped up again? Is it in-state, out-of-state movement? Is it in-county? Kind of tell me about who's selling and who's buying and where they're going and coming from.
Well, so the actual transaction volume has gone down. I believe it's roughly about half from 2020. I mean, it's something drastically lower, the transaction volume out there, but because low inventory, right? So most of the move-up buyers, the downsizing buyers, right, are not selling, right? Because they have the rates, the strong rates, unless they have fully paid off. I think I went to a conference the other day. They said across the board, I want to say 50% of all of them, American homeowners have 3% or lower interest rates, right? It was something crazy like that. I mean, it might even be higher than that. But so, I mean, we see a lot of that here. So most of the individuals that we have purchasing are either people that just want to get their foot in the door and they'll just get something just to kind of say, okay, I own San Diego. Mind you, I mean, they're probably for the most part going to pay less on rent, but they hold that property for the next 3 years with rents going up at between 4% to 10%, right? You're talking about, okay, well, you'll probably break even 3 to 4 years. And then after that, you'll be paying less than what you'd be for rent, right? So it's kind of looking the long game. Or we have military, right? Military that move into town that need to purchase. So those are probably the two biggest ones. You have some that are moving up, but they say, you know what? Okay, I have enough credit card debt that I'm going to pay off the credit card debt with my equity and then buy something, even though my rate's going to go up by 3%.
That makes sense. And do you work with a lot of military clients?
You kind of have to. I mean, in San Diego, if you're not working with military clients, that's probably going to be a third or a half of your business you're going to lose out on, right?
Oh, yeah. One, and my question along that is, are you seeing a lot of those military clients that are coming in and then they get PCS'd or whatever to another part of the country or another part of the world? Are they keeping those homes, especially over the last few years, if they got locked in at a 2%, 3% rate?
It really varies on the individual. I mean, I think for the most part, I've seen a lot of those, if they have no intention of staying in San Diego, they'll sell, they'll take their equity and they'll buy where they're going to buy for, I mean, probably half the price that they had a property here, right? Some of them are willing to be landlords. I'm trying to think. I think most of the ones that are willing to be landlords are usually the younger ones and the single ones,
mm-hmm.
Right? That's at least from my experience. I could be totally wrong on that, but it seems like you have the younger ones and they're mostly single.
Sure. I gotcha. Which also adds to the inventory problems too, if there are a lot of those people, because younger and single and military, it's not uncommon. Granted, there's plenty that get married at 18 and, you know, depending on what branch and everything. We have a huge military population out here in Colorado Springs and then back in San Antonio where I was before. But yeah.
Yeah, the house hack, I mean, that's the one thing you can still do as a military person is you live in the garage, rent the house, and now you're already getting the money from Uncle Sam. So, I mean, stuff like that, you can get creative if you're younger, I think, but if you're unable to be creative and you have to actually live in the primary and things like that, it makes it harder.
Sure. Yeah. Well, there's a point I want to pull out of this whole conversation that's applicable across the board as far as buy and hold real estate. So maybe you're listening, you have no interest in California or San Diego. Well, it's a good model framework for places where buy and hold makes sense, right? So west side of Colorado Springs, totally built out. There's really no dirt left. You can't build up the mountain. And then if you go south, east, north, it's all built out. Or San Diego is an easy example, right? And it needs to be along with being built out. I mean, and these tend to correlate, but somewhere that people want to be with strong industry, right? If it was only one industry in a spot, I would be concerned. And so all that to say, I don't want to buy and hold real estate in a lot of the markets where I'm flipping land because there's 50,000 infill lots, and I'm not exaggerating. In some of these markets, you know, tens of thousands of infill lots, very easy to get a permit, pro-growth governments, endless water, sewer, or it's just easy to do a well and septic, right? Those are the places, great to make money, but I don't want to buy and hold there. I want to buy and hold, for example, I bought a fourplex last week, and in that market, there are endless infill lots, but they're almost out of water. And they have maybe 150 water taps left, and then they're out. And not only that, but that government there, the Metro District, they don't say it overtly, but they will do just about anything to stop you from building over two units. If you go to three units or above, it's commercial. And what they make you do to get that done is obscene. And they like to add new things every time anyone tries to do it. And so I'm ranting a little bit, but guys, again, San Diego is a great framework for a place that's really ideal for buy and hold. It's highly desirable, totally built out. The government makes it almost impossible to bring on new housing. You can deal with the laws. I mean, you know, barring California falling in the ocean, I expect, well, you know, in the coming decades, San Diego will continue to go up and up, and especially if you're west of the five and in the prime areas. So I think that's a useful framework.
Because for people listening right there, I mean, if you could take basically Dan's advice and you can find something in the opportunity zone, like Dan's talking about, I mean, then I think it's 7 years or 8 years if you own it, then you basically save a lot on capital gains if you were to sell it. You want to do a 1030. So, I mean, again, I'm not a CPA. I'm not a tax person. Talk that up, but opportunity is something to think about for you.
Yeah, I'll have to look into that. But anyways, Vinny, any questions that we should have asked you but didn't? Anything else you want to say?
Yeah, I would say, you guys asked, I think, a lot of good questions, so it's hard to take away. If you're an investor and you're looking to purchase in an area, I mean, I would say, yes, you could talk to every realtor out there, but it's probably best is to kind of figure out their experience. And for any realtor out there, right, you have an investor coming to you, talk to that person about their experience, right? I remember when I was younger and I was so gung-ho about getting leads, I got a deal locked in with this investor, and I found out, I got a call from another investor buddy. He was like, hey, I see your listing over here, and I just got called by this other person over here, and he's trying to sell it to me, but I see you're under contract. What's going on? And I found out that he was a wholesaler, but he was saying that, yeah. So just understanding, are they actually going to carry the property, fix and flip, buy and hold, or are they wholesaling? And nothing wrong with wholesaler if they have a database. It's just a matter of knowing what you're getting yourself into.
Sure. Where's the best place to find out more about you and your business?
Well, you can text me if you have any information, 858-345-7829, or check out my website, theenriquezgroup.com.
Great. Vinny, we'll put all that in the show notes. So listeners, if you're looking for real estate in San Diego, reach out to Vinny. Until then, guys, this is Dan Habercost and Mason McDonald with the Big Picture Blueprint, signing off.
And that's it for today's episode of the Big Picture Blueprint. If you found it helpful, please share it with your friends or anyone you think that it could benefit. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a rating, and we'll see you in the next episode.